From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
The Mission.
Excelsior.
Redwood City.
American Canyon.
San Francisco.
Vallejo.
I'm from Redwood City, so I guess that's in the peninsula.
Coming up, we tackle two big problems at once, employment and the environment.
So it seemed like a natural thing to address an environmental justice issue by providing jobs to folks who are low income, who need jobs.
Then we'll hear about a literary event that celebrates musician memoirs. Sort of.
They're not masters of literature by any means.
And we'll meet a man who finds music in unlikely places.
You know, I'm one of these people who carries a recorder most of the time and sort of annoy my family by saying, oh my God, I have to go record this ventilation fan right now.
We're going to blow you away today on Cross Current. Stay with us. We hear a lot about green jobs these days, jobs in renewable energy like solar or wind, or retrofitting houses so they stay warmer. President Obama, campaigning in 2008, promised that investing $150 billion in clean energy would generate 5 million jobs.
We are going to invest in affordable, renewable sources of energy, wind power and solar power and the next generation of biofuels. An investment that will lead to new industries and 5 million new jobs that pay well and cannot be outsourced.
But after spending $90 billion in stimulus money, only a fraction of those jobs have actually been created. Here in San Francisco, we know the city is trying to get greener. It's committed to reducing carbon emissions by a quarter by the year 2017 and getting to 100% renewable energy by 2020, which means that if green jobs are going to pop up anywhere, there's a good chance it can be here. Two nonprofits are trying to make that vision work. In The Mission, Lead Free LLC is teaching people who work as janitors and home cleaners how to clean up houses contaminated with lead. And in SOMA, Asian Neighborhood Design trains people, many of them with criminal backgrounds, to do skilled work installing solar panels. KALW's Charlie Mintz stopped by recently and brings us this report.
In recovery circles, it's a cliche that you have to hit rock bottom before you can come back up.
I had 26 charges when I got arrested, and I already had like 12 here and like 10 up in Washington. I mean, for me, this is it. If I can't make this work for me right now, then I'm going to grow old in a prison cell, you know?
Altogether, Aaron Buchanan guesses he spent 8 years of his life in jail, and many more addicted to meth and other drugs. He's broken into people's houses to steal their things. He's broken his back jumping out of a third-story window. Today, though, he's been clean for 17 months, and he's hoping he can break into a new trade.
You know, I'm doing this for me, but, you know, I want to make my family proud, you know. And, you know, I don't want them worrying about whether I'm laying dead in a ditch anymore, you know what I mean?
Buchanan is sitting in an industrial garage that's been turned into a classroom. All around us are carpentry projects in various stages of completion. In the middle of the room are two rows of desks seating 19 men and women with stories a lot like Buchanan's. They're here today to begin a 3.5-month training class offered by a nonprofit called Asian Neighborhood Design. At the end of it, they'll have the skills to get green construction jobs, specifically installing solar panels.
Just because a kid has tattoos and he has a rough background does not mean he doesn't understand what 16 on center means, and doesn't mean he can't read a tape measure and do good quality work.
What does 16 on center mean?
16 on center is when you're framing. It's to make sure everything is square and everything's lined up.
Jamie Brewster is site manager at Asian Neighborhood Design's Employment Training Center, upstairs from the classroom. His office walls are decorated with pictures of his daughter, now 7 years old. Right behind his desk, though, is a very different kind of picture. A black and white photo of a young man looking defiant.
Keeps me focused. Anytime I feel like I might be going backwards or slipping up, I just turn around and look at that, and that's a great reminder.
What does it say?
It's just my California Department of Corrections inmate ID card. And that was the fifth and final time that I was incarcerated back in 1999.
Brewster says the problems involved drugs. Back then, he was a professional skateboarder, but he ended up going to prison 5 times.
That was actually my mom's birthday, that date. Yeah, so it's a great reminder for me. It's important that people understand that you can go here and still end up where I'm at.
Brewster's made it to their side. He's been sober over 10 years, and now he helps people like Aaron Buchanan turn their lives around, too. Solar is good business. It's still small. Only about 120,000 Americans work in the industry. But it's adding jobs at about 6 times the national rate. Solar jobs are also often non-union, which means lower wages, but also an easier and less complicated path to employment.
No offense to the unions, because they've done great things for the United States, but here in San Francisco, it's a lot easier to get them involved in a non-union job because there's less hoops to jump through. The prerequisites are less, and oftentimes the employers are a little easier to deal with.
Brewster's been placing people in solar jobs for almost 4 years, and he says he usually finds work for about 3/4 of each graduating class. Last year, he did even better and placed 17 of 18 graduates in jobs paying about $15 an hour. This is the kind of program people call a win-win. It's a ladder up for people who've hit rock bottom, and it's helping San Francisco reduce its carbon emissions. But carbon isn't the only toxin San Francisco has to worry about. Residents are finding jobs battling all kinds of pollutants. A few miles from Asian Neighborhood Design in the Mission, Myrna Melgar had another idea for turning an environmental hazard into economic opportunity.
It was a double whammy.
Myrna Melgar is Deputy Director of Mission Economic Development Corporation, or META. She also recently helped start another organization under META's umbrella, Lead Free LLC. The double whammy she mentioned is Lead Free's twofold mission. First, to clean up the lead that's poisoning children in some of San Francisco's poorest communities. And second, to help low-income residents in the Mission District, many of them housekeepers and janitors, find good jobs doing it. Lead Free has only been up and running for a year, but so far it's cleaned up about 6 homes and helped about 12 people begin the transition to lead cleanup jobs.
So it seemed like a natural thing to address an environmental justice issue by providing jobs to folks who are low-income, who need jobs.
We know lead dust is bad. In children, it can create a whole host of developmental disabilities. Some research has even linked national crime trends to the amount of lead in the atmosphere. In short, it's bad news. Worse news is that it's present in almost any house built before 1978. That's more than 90% of San Francisco's homes. The mayor's Office of Housing administers federal grants to help clean up lead, and it's partnered with Lead Free to handle emergency cases. There are also cleanup subsidies available to low-income families with children. They can hire whoever they want to do the work, but Lead Free is hoping they'll hire them.
One of the trainees that I have right now is a single mom of a little 6-year-old girl, and prior to this, she cleaned houses whenever she could get one.
That's Jenny Fontenot. She's worked as both a social worker and a lead remediation specialist, and she helps train people through Lead Free. Her trainees learn the idea isn't to get all the lead out of a house, but instead to make it safe. That can mean encasing lead beneath special barriers, that's called encapsulating, or removing a particularly toxic window or door. What works best depends on the situation, and there's a lot to learn. Most of the new trainees are still just getting started.
We're going to be training them, sending them to state certified to get state certification, and hopefully get them good jobs.
Trainees at Lead Free, just like the trainees at Asian Neighborhood Design, are headed for non-union jobs. Still, the Environmental Protection Agency offers a variety of certifications for lead cleanup, all the way up to supervisor. Earning all of them can take up to a year, but it's worth it. Just like in solar, a trained lead cleanup worker makes about $15 an hour. Again, Myrna Melgar.
That was the essence of why the program was created in the first place, because the wage differential between just cleaning houses and what somebody can earn doing lead dust cleaning is quite significant.
It's a shame there isn't a nicer way of saying killing two birds with one stone. But solving two problems with one job is a good start. In San Francisco, I'm Charlie Mintz for Cross Currents.
That story was produced for Chew on This, KALW's new show about creative solutions to tricky problems. Join them for their next taping at 1 p.m. this Saturday at the Soma Street Food Park. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. When's the last time you read a musician's memoir? You know, those glossy books telling the life stories of the superstars and not so superstars who've made it in the American pop scene. Have you ever flipped through one of those at a bookstore and thought, how narcissistic? What would possess anyone to read this? Well, an event happening tonight wonders the same thing. Way Behind the Music is an event created by the people who bring you the annual Litquake Festival. It's described as a night of hilariously odd music memoirs brought to juicy and sometimes baffling life on stage. Local artists will read from the actual published literary efforts of people like Backstreet Boy Nick Carter's mom, David Cassidy, One Direction, yes, they've written a book, and Flavor Flav. It's the third year for the event. Organizer Jack Boulware joined me in studio to talk about it.
Litquake has done several events in the past where we have musicians come up and read from their own work, or we have music writers come up and read from their writing about music. But I thought it would be fun to actually read from some of these so-called autobiographies that have been published since the 1960s, I guess, is when the genre really sort of popped. Books before that were very micromanaged by talent and publishing. That, you know, there was nothing, anything really of interest in any of these books. They're very bland. They were very much geared towards the fan. And sometime in the 60s and then in the 70s and from then on, it became this sort of really bizarre confessional sort of genre. It's enormously overpaid to the authors, and they rarely, if at all, ever make their money back. It's incredible. And they still get published, and it's fascinating to read through. I've probably read myself maybe 100 of them in the last 3 years, just combing through, trying to find bits that we could read out loud, that would work out loud. And sometimes it's really a page or 2 pages, but it has to be the juiciest part of that book.
That's right. I'm from Toronto. My first date has been sort of mythologized as Bieber's dating disaster. That's in quotes, by the way. I took her to King's, a buffet restaurant. Yes, I wore a white shirt. Yes, I got spaghetti. No, this was not the brightest idea. But it wasn't a big trauma, though. This girl was a friend, and she's pretty cool. We laughed about it. All things considered, while it wasn't one of my smoothest dating experiences, it gave us both a funny story to tell, and it was a good starter date for me. I was a lot more nervous about that date than I ever was about performing on stage, but once it was over with, I was comfortable with the idea of going out with other girls and having fun. Seriously, it wasn't the worst thing that ever happened to me. It really wasn't. To a person on a date, happening to a person on a date, getting a stain on your shirt? I mean, quit crying. That's nothing.
Yeah, they're pretty stupid. Justin Bieber has no business writing a book, you know, or Miley Cyrus, or I'm trying to think
Flava
of some.
Flava Flav.
Flava Flav is, yeah, they're not masters of literature by any means. Boom, boom,
boom, boom. Why, baby, why don't you treat me like you used to do?
And Pat Boone wrote a guide to for teenage girls in the 1950s about what to do when they start experiencing puberty. It's just bizarre. It's hilarious. Pat Boone, what business does he have giving teenage girls advice about, oh, your breasts are starting to grow now? And you're like, Pat Boone, stop. Just stop it. When we read that one out loud, I had Bob Calhoun
read it. That one's just wrong.
Bob Calhoun is like a 350-pound professional wrestler and a musician, and I purposefully matched him up with the Pat Boone book. It was very disturbing.
So who do you have performing tonight?
We have Jill Olson from the band Red Meat. She's going to be reading from Jane Carter, the memoir of... Jane Carter was a mother of a Backstreet Boy.
Nick
Carter, right.
Yes.
But apparently that is a sub-genre because there was another member of the Backstreet Boys whose mother also wrote her own memoir. So, you know, you can read into that however you like, but the Backstreet Boys, that's a gravy train of mom memoirs coming out of that band. We have Ian Port, who's the music editor of SF Weekly. He's going to be reading from Jimi Hendrix and Wyclef Jean. And then, Jill's also reading a memoir by Ann and Nancy Wilson from the band Heart. And some of these, again, they're not necessarily badly written, but they're just like really great moments. And then there's a few others. Parker Gibbs, he's a local music promoter. He's reading from Flavor Flav, and also Corinne Stephans. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. She started off as a dancer in hip hop videos, and now she has 3 books. Unbelievable. It should be quite entertaining.
Way Behind the Music happens tonight at 7 at 1772 Market Street in San Francisco. Get more information at KALW.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Now it's time for Audio Files, our series of conversations with the most creative people working with sound.
You hear that?
Can you hear me?
It's incredible.
This weekend, a local artist is bringing the stories of Chinese immigrants to the stage on a boat.
It's part of almost like a investigative journalism combined with a very epic poem.
Her name is Renee Young, and she's the artistic director of Chinese Whispers, a performance of oral histories. She gathered these stories on a trip along the route of the Transcontinental Railroad, stories that otherwise would have been forgotten. The performance is accompanied by the sound design of San Francisco artist Jeremiah Moore. He's designed for film, theater productions, museum exhibits, art gallery installations, public sound walks.
You know, I'm one of these people who carries a recorder most of the time and sort of annoy my family by saying, oh my god, I have to go record this ventilation fan right now.
We understand, Jeremiah. Moore took a unique approach to producing the music for the Chinese Whispers Oral History Project. KALW's Erica Mu explains how in this edition of the Audio Files.
If you were the sound designer on a Chinese American oral history project, you might be tempted to use something like this. But Rennie Young's Chinese Whispers isn't that kind of project.
We don't want to have that because immediately everybody goes, oh, that's Chinese stuff. And like, now you're in that box that everyone sees as the Chinese box.
So Jeremiah Moore chose to use some non-traditional instruments when designing the sound of Chinese Whispers. He was inspired by the human voice.
Those are not voices.
So this is actually made from voices.
Really?
That's right. Moore is producing music from people's voices.
The process is granular synthesis. It's like taking a few milliseconds of sound, kind of a little window of sound, they call it grains, and then playing it back at a pitch in this case. And then you can kind of scan through the sound, move that grain through the sound, and that's where you're hearing this sort of almost syllabic quality, and you're this... That's actually syllables of the original material being spoken.
So the music that you just heard was made from this.
For some reason, I don't really remember him.
That's incredible. That's incredible.
Yeah, we interpret language as language, but language is also sound. So here it's really being used as sound material. So it's, you know, if I said radio, it's like radio, you know, it's like if you kind of zoomed microscopically into a few milliseconds of that sound and hovered on it, you have a, e, o, you know, you have these vowel sounds. So, you know, it's an extrapolation of a word into a sonic musical texture.
granular synthesis can sound a little complicated, but think about it this way. A grain is just a really, really, really small sound, but it can have a kind of musical texture depending on its length. For example, at 5 milliseconds, a grain sounds like a click. And at 10 or 20 milliseconds, you'll hear a slice or a blip of sound. And that blip can have a tone.
The grains longer and longer, they cease to sound like a texture, and they start to sound like you're hearing it looping. You know, you're hearing like a little slice repeated and repeated and repeated.
Depending on how long you stretch it and how much you shift the pitch.
And that's, I think, where it stops being a grain and it starts being a sound clip or a sound object.
And in this case, it's where this phrase...
For some reason, I don't really remember him.
Spoken by Frank Kwan, a descendant of a local Chinese fishing community, stops being a string of words and starts being music.
For some reason, I don't remember him. For some reason, I don't remember him.
For some reason, I don't remember him.
For some reason, I don't remember him.
Chinese Whispers is a project based on memories that were passed on and stories that might have been lost. It helps us read between the lines of recorded history. Through more sound design, we can also hear between the words.
For some reason, I don't remember him.
In San Francisco, I'm Erica Mu for Cross Currents.
You can hear Jeremiah Moore's work in this Saturday's performance of Chinese Whispers on the historic Balclutha sailing ship off Hyde Street Pier in San Francisco. Event starts at 2:30. And to find out more about upcoming listening salons, sound walks, and other social sonic experiences, visit our website, kalw.org. That's also where you can hear our full report on Chinese Whispers. And before we leave you today, we wanted to share the story behind the audiograph sound that we've been playing all week on KALW.
Hello there. I'm Farmer Brown. One day, I came out to the barn and heard an awful lot of racket. A cow was jumping over the moon while my little dog laughed and the cat played the fiddle.
We asked you what you think it is and where in the Bay Area it's from. KALW's Laura Saponara brings us the answer.
Bienvenido a Fairyland.
Hello there. I'm Farmer Brown.
Fairyland is located in the heart of Oakland, right next to Lake Merritt. It's this colorful, safe, contained, intriguing, somewhat surreal playground for toddlers and young children.
And the dish ran away with the spoon.
When children walk through the door, they have the option to get a plastic key, and they fit right into these sort of decrepit-looking audio boxes, and the kids get to insert the key and turn the key, and they generate the sound of different fairy tales that come out of these old speakers.
Well, the first person to call in and get it right was Donna Shemp. Congratulations, Donna. We'll be sending you a KALW t-shirt. And for the rest of you, there'll be another contest next week. In the meantime, visit our Facebook page, KALW, to hear more from Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. And And that does it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Julie Kane, Audrey Dilling, Panina Eilberg-Schwartz, Nina Gensler-Debs, Alex Kreminski, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Erica Moo, Seth Samuel, Laura Saponara, Stephen Short, RJ Sloan, and Adam Teitelbaum. Today's show is engineered by Chris Hoff. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Martina Castro is our managing editor. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. Thanks to City Car Share, which provides an alternative transportation option for our reporters. They're online at citycarshare.org. And thank you. We are listener-supported radio. You're hearing a duet between a classical viola and an Australian didgeridoo. Nils Bultmann, who's playing viola, wrote this piece, and he's playing live on Sunday at St. Mark's Lutheran Church in San Francisco as part of the Noe Valley Chamber Music Series. The concert begins at 4 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.